From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 5th day of June 2017. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kirk Kimmel from Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Scott Irwin, agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I, will join us to take a look at some of the research he and Daryl Good have been doing, correlating the numbers that come from USDA's NASS Weekly Crop Progress Report, the condition figures, in fact, and end of season and yields. And then as we wrap up our time together, we'll take up the weather forecast with Mark Russo. He's at Brisk Pulse in Chicago, Illinois. Oh, and along the way, we'll check in with the folks at the Anderson's Climbers facility and what they're seeing on the ground as it relates to cash grain. And it all happens on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Monday afternoon. We're now joined by Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities in Normal. Good afternoon to you, Kurt.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
Hey, so you've been a little drier than others in the state of Illinois, which is unusual. In fact, dry enough that USDA made note of it in one of its weather outlooks last week. What do conditions look like there at the home front? I know the crops probably look pretty decent. Weather, at least the yards turn faster than the crops sometimes do.
Yeah, I was a little bullish coming in this morning here. I moved the yard pie for the last time here for a little while. We're not brown dead, but we're getting there. Crop actually looks fairly good. We need this warmer, drier weather. The root development to the downside is going to be very aggressive here over the near term. That's why we need some movement downward. So when we do get some rain here, it'll be real beneficial. I guess Corey from down at Blue Mound sort of gets the picture for the day on Twitter. He showed his, well, I don't know if it's his field, but a field rolling just a little bit. I mean, the crop's real good shape. It's just, you know, roll of 90 degrees and some wind kind of defending itself here. This afternoon's crop conditions report's expected to show some slight improvement. Last week, we were at 65% good to excellent. This week, the average guess is about 67% good to excellent. To be bearish, you need to have a good to excellent category up in the 70s, 80s, but you know, we got a lot of weather in front of us here, and the weather guys is going to get the most play here as we move forward here, because as everybody knows, when we're too wet, the fear is turning too dry, Todd.
Speaking of USDA, the numbers will be out for the June crop or June WASD, or World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate, on Friday of this week. Any reason to think they'll show anything different than they have in the month of May?
I would think it'd probably just be minor changes. Export-wise, this morning's export inspection report was, you know, fairly decent. We did see some sales, new sales of beans, 120,000 tons of beans. 60 was old and 60 was new. So demand's not going away. Ethanol demand continues to move along in here. Ethanol exports could be a question. But long story short, we might change corn ending stocks by 25 million bushels, bean ending stocks maybe by 5. New crop, we're not far enough long here to really start messing with where they're at right now. I imagine they want to wait to get to the June acreage report and a few more crop conditions report before changing yield a whole lot. So I'd be surprised if we see a big shocker. Worldwide, expect maybe the Brazilian corn and bean crop both to go up another notch. But I don't see a huge surprise, which means fasten your seatbelts.
Well, we can wait and we'll see those numbers on Friday. In the mean space, what have farmers been telling you about crop conditions across the whole of the United States?
Variable. Their situation where guys have been fortunate and only had to plant at one time. Their situations where there's been a replant, you know, crops got in three times. I guess over the weekend here, portions of southern Illinois received anywhere from 3 to 4 inches of rain in some spots there. So there has been a little switching from corn to beans, but for the most part, it's been a challenging spring, and We're getting to the point now, whatever we've got done is going to be it, and we'll have to see what the rest of the growing season materializes. The biggest decision was population count. A lot of guys were on the edge, do I tear it up or not? So there's going to be a lot of agronomists busy helping these guys out here as we go forward.
Hey, thanks so much. We'll talk with you again next week.
Very good. Take care.
You too. That is Kurt Kimmel. He's with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. In today's agricultural news, U.S. trade officials are meeting this week with their counterparts in China to finalize trade protocols regarding the export of U.S. beef to China. However, as the Financial Times reported last week, China already has access to some prime U.S. beef cuts. That's because there's a flourishing market in secondary imports from Hong Kong, where China's ban on U.S. beef did not apply. Cuts destined for China could already make up half of U.S. beef exports to Hong Kong. Still, beef demand is growing in China, along with demand for higher quality beef cuts. Senate Agriculture Committee Chairman Pat Roberts says the plan gives beef access to more than 1 billion consumers.
I was very heartened to see the news on the agreement made with China to allow U.S. beef access to nearly 1.4 billion Chinese customers. Details of that agreement still need to be finalized, and we hope that this time the U.S. beef and beef products will be granted true market access.
Well, Roberts told the U.S. Meat Exports Federation recently that trade wins, like the agreement with China, are a good start to helping farmers and ranchers when it comes to trade negotiations.
I've tried to encourage the administration to focus on longstanding trade barriers faced by American producers, and if they continue to deliver wins like they did on China and the beef trade, rest assured our producers and exporters could experience real benefits, and Lord knows we need that.
U.S. agriculture and beef groups have estimated that exports to China, once established, could be worth an estimated $2.6 billion for the U.S. livestock industry. Well, we'll switch topic areas, but stay with livestock. The Centers for Disease Control says more than 370 people have reported salmonella infections from backyard flocks this year, and more than one-third of them were children under 5 years of age. The CDC is reporting 8 separate outbreaks across 47 states in backyard flocks. These outbreaks are expected to continue for the next several months, according to a public warning issued last week by the CDC. Public health officials interviewed 228 of the sick people, and 190, or 83%, reported contact with live poultry in the week before they became ill. While contracting salmonella and other bacteria from live poultry is relatively easy, the preventative measures recommended by public health officials are also easy, but must be practiced diligently. The CDC recommends hand washing after handling live poultry, not allowing live poultry in the house, not allowing children under 5 to handle poultry without supervision, and the CDC says do not snuggle or kiss the birds, touch your mouth or eat or drink around live poultry. And finally today, Deere & Company has announced it signed an agreement to acquire the Wirtgen Group. That's a privately held international company that is the leading manufacturer worldwide of road construction equipment. The acquisition is valued at $5.2 billion or 4.35 billion euros, all in cash. Headquartered in Germany, the Wirtgen Group has 5 premium brands across the entire road construction sector, spanning milling, processing, mixing, paving, compaction, and rehabilitation. Deere says it plans to maintain the Wirtgen Group's existing brands, management, manufacturing footprint, employees, and distribution network. That's a look at today's agricultural news. Well, you know, each Monday, the United States Department of Agriculture updates the weekly crop progress report. It sometimes contains a national condition report. It's doing that now for both wheat and corn, but not yet for soybeans. Those numbers can be used, as Daryl Good and Scott Irwin have been doing for some time, to calculate the end-of-season yields, and among other items. Daryl and Scott wanted to see how close they could get and what those numbers actually looked like over the long term. So they did a lot of research on it and wrote about it last week on the FarmDoc Daily website, not once, but twice. You can go back and look at those articles at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. You can see a video on it online at willag.org, or you can just stick with us and listen to what Scott Irwin has to say. I talked to him on Friday about these numbers and asked him just exactly what the weekly condition number from the first corn condition rating of the season to the last one of the season looked like in terms of how it changed over time.
Right. For corn, it's about 4%. And for soybeans, remembering off the top of my head, I think about 7%.
6.8.
Well, I was close. You know, that was when we first started studying these. It took us a few years to kind of figure this out, because we would watch the tendency for the ratings to generally fall, and you kind of scratch your head, Todd, and you say, well, that's odd. And then you think about it a little bit, and then we figured out what happens, that that's just inherent to the ratings, because most crops come up reasonably normal, and they preserve most of their yield potential, and nothing bad happens. So the ratings start high and tend to end up relatively high in a majority of years. But in a few years, like 1988, 2012, 2003, we have really bad weather, and the ratings just drop like a rock. And there are huge drops in the ratings over the course of a season. So when you average across a lot of small changes and a few big changes negative, you end up with an average negative change in the ratings, meaning they drop. And so what we did is, first time I've seen it in print, is we carefully took a look at what do those average drops look like? What's their frequency? What's their seasonal pattern? That's what we really did in this article yesterday.
And what were your findings?
Well, probably the most interesting thing that we found that we hadn't really focused on or detected before is there's kind of a mysterious increase in that tendency to fall starting around 1999 in the late 90s. And it's very obvious when you look really carefully at the data, and it's not obvious why that would have happened, and particularly what appears to be fairly suddenly. But it's quite noticeable. For example, in corn, we went from about an average of 5% to, since the late 90s, about an average drop in a typical year of 8%. You know, that's not a huge difference, but it's certainly would have an impact on how you would input these ratings after adjusting for the bias into some kind of forecasting model.
I can't come up with anything off the top of my head that would do that.
Well, what's interesting is it really shouldn't be there. Okay, so the bias is inherent in the ratings because of the process I described just a couple minutes ago. But it really shouldn't change over a long enough time period, because the ratings are supposed to be ratings relative to normal yield potential. So the normal yield potential should be being updated by the evaluators every year. And so you shouldn't get that kind of shift. And the thing that's probably most dramatic in our recent work is there's been a pretty dramatic increase in the first ratings of soybeans over time. They've had a tendency to drift upward at a rate of about half a point per year. So that means over 30 years, soybean ratings are on average 15 points higher now than they were 30 years ago. And I don't know why.
More research needed.
Yeah, more research. I'm kind of suspicious that there's been, this is my own personal view and I don't have any way to document this, there may well have been a change in the composition of the evaluators over time that the crop conditions are based upon. And, you know, different pools of people may have I guess, more optimism or more conservatism about yield prospects.
Well, speaking of yield prospects, I know you did a calculation on this, though it's really early. However, for corn, it was a bit of an eye-opening number.
Oh, of course it is. And again, we want to say strongly, you know, because our article last week showed that these early season numbers really don't tell you very much because so much of the season's left. But based on that first number, if you take the sum of good to excellent that was released last week, you get a rating of 65. And then if you take the bias for the last 18 years off of that, which would be 8 points, that puts you down to 57 as your best unbiased projection of ending season ratings starting at 57. That's the adjustment you need to make based on that tendency over time. And then you plug that into the relationship that we presented in the article, you end up at 164.3 based on that set of calculations. So it's an intriguing and a pretty low number. Clearly, that's not where the market's at, and this is just one model and one exercise. But certainly something to keep your eye on.
That, of course, is Scott Irwin, agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. If you'd like to see how he and Daryl Good calculated or put that math together that used the first national rating for corn, that was the crop condition rating, not from today, of course, but from last week, to come up with a 164.3 crop, you can do that on the Farm Doc Daily website. That's farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. It should be about the third or fourth story down in the list at this point, but you'll see it. Just look for Scott Irwin's name there along with Daryl Good. Now, joining us to talk a little bit about the crop that's in the ground and what the condition is like here in our part of the world is Greg Johnson. He's from the Andersons. Hey, Greg, thanks for being with us this afternoon. We appreciate it.
You're welcome.
So tell me a little bit about conditions right here around Champaign-Urbana.
Well, we finally had a dry week, a warmer and drier week, so that allowed some fields to dry out and allowed a lot of bean planting progress and corn replanting progress to take place last week. We probably won't have much emergence until later this week on what was planted last week, but at least things are starting to look like we're going to get planted. The corn conditions, I tell people we're not as bad as we are as they are in Indiana, but we're not as good as they are to the west of us in Iowa, Minnesota, and Nebraska. So, you know, there's some good, some bad here in Illinois, but definitely not as good as the last 2 years. And those crop ratings, those crop conditions reflect that. You know, we are off to, I think, the fifth worst start in the last 40 years. Now, that's a start. I mean, you know, doesn't mean we'll finish that way, but you know, we certainly didn't get out of the gates very well as far as planning and emergence is concerned. So we've got a ways to go, but this warmer, drier weather for the first week of that will definitely help. But we're starting from a much lower number than what we have been used to starting at the last 2-3 years, that's for sure.
I like to use the old adage from Easter, we had 7 Sundays of rain, and that actually went true, and we've shut that thing down now, at least for a couple of weeks. It's kind of what the doctor ordered for the crop, though.
It is. We need it. We need 10 days of warmer, drier weather, maybe 2 weeks, and I think most people will be happy with that, but it's the next 10 days to 2 weeks after that. We don't want to see the pattern completely change over to warm and dry. We'd like to see the pattern, you know, start to where it rains a half to 3/4 of an inch every week. But this first week or 10 days, the dry weather is definitely needed. And then we'll just see what the pattern is after this week.
And what are your bids for the day?
Cash corn tonight is 362, new corn 367, old crop beans 907, new beans 898. And new crop wheat is 414.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd.
Greg Johnson is with the Andersons. This is the Closing Market Report for Monday afternoon. It's the 5th day of June. We're joined now by Mark Russo. He's at Risk Pulse out of Chicago, Illinois. Hi, Mark. How are you today?
Good, Todd. Glad to be here.
Well, farmers are finally getting in the bulk of the Midwest weather that they would like so they can finish up some field work. And the crops, I think, probably will enjoy some of the warmer and drier weather. How long will we have it around?
Well, we see this from a temperature perspective. We see this warmer pattern here, which you saw a taste of it over the weekend, a little cool down here right now for the next several days. But we see temperatures warming back up over the upcoming weekend and staying warmer than normal all of next week. And we feel that will be the main pattern here through the end of the month. So again, once we get into this weekend, more persistent, warmer than normal temperatures, nothing in the way of any extreme temperatures, but or highly anomalous, but certainly a warmer bias for we feel the middle to end of this month. As far as precipitation is concerned here. We certainly have turned into a less active pattern across the central U.S., and we see that pattern continuing over the next 10 days with very limited rainfall in the central U.S. Much of the main precipitation will be in areas of the southern U.S., really focused on the southeast. And really, the next opportunity for more significant rainfall looks to be into the 11 to 15-day time frame. And at this time, it looks to be a good rain event for the Midwest.
At that time, we'll make sure that that's around because we'll be looking for it. In the mean space, can you take me into those spring wheat-growing regions because they've been drier for a bit longer than the rest of the United States?
Yeah, that's certainly a focus of attention as the dryness has been long-term, like you said there, Todd. And we've also seen some of the hottest temperatures here in the U.S. centered across that region, Montana, the Dakotas, even extending up into the Canadian prairie acreage in Saskatchewan and Manitoba. And the bottom line is that region will continue to be on the dry side for the next several weeks. And along with that, we'll see a bias of warmer temperatures. So with the crops fully planted, spring wheat and most of canola planted, we will be seeing an increase in crop stress. And as a result, it's an area to watch closely here.
And I take it it's come just a bit earlier than usual. Other places we ought to consider, maybe you could bounce us through Europe and China?
Yeah, Europe is seeing some dryness as has been the trend here this past spring, and in some cases it goes back to the winter in portions of Western Europe. We are going to see ridging of high pressure prevail across Europe over the next couple of weeks. It's going to be more expansive, and so as a result, we will see rainfall near to slightly below normal. Again, not extreme, but for some of the dry pockets that are currently in place, one of which is in central Ukraine, we are going to see a limited improvement coming up. And from a temperature perspective, overall, a warm bias over the next few weeks, that is an area to watch because of the ridging here developing right now. So Europe and the Black Sea region is on our watch list. And China is also on our watch list too. They have some dryness around. Again, not as widespread as what they had back a few weeks ago, but their overall pattern will feature some improvement in rainfall, but not enough to fully eliminate the dryness.
And finally, in the southern hemisphere, Australia.
Yeah, with wheat planting still taking place across Australia, overall, they've been on the dry side, both in their western wheat belt and their eastern wheat belt. And there's simply no sign of that changing over the next couple of weeks. So Australia is an area to watch for dryness, with the main crop impacted being winter wheat.
Hey, thanks so much, Mark.
You're welcome, Todd.
And that, of course, Mark Russo. He's with Risk Pulse out of Chicago. Helps us wrap up this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.